Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer, TV presenter, and gastronaut. This edition is made in partnership with Volac. Now, as we age, our bodies undergo significant changes, and maintaining our health becomes even more crucial. Protein, which is often called the building block of life, plays a fundamental role in this process, from supporting muscle strength and bone density to aiding in hormone regulation. Protein is a vital component of healthy aging. And for women, growing older comes with its own unique set of challenges, with the menopause affecting everything from mood to metabolism. So, how can protein support the well-being of women as they age? Can it help with the symptoms of menopause? And how might it contribute to maintaining a healthy lifestyle during what can often be a stressful phase of life? Well, here with me to discuss this are two absolutely fantastic guests. Dr. Elisa Glover, nutrition specialist at Volac International. Hello there, Elisa.
Hi, Stefan.
Great to have you with us. And the brilliant Mike Hughes, head of research and insight at FMCG Gurus. Hello there, Mike.
Hi, Stefan.
Great to have you with us as well. Now, let's start off, Mike, with a sort of broad question around attitudes to aging, and particularly amongst women. So FMCG Gurus produced a global report looking at women's attitudes towards health and well-being and healthy aging. So the question is, what were the main concerns that you discovered? How might that affect people's behaviour? Were there any surprises in there?
Yeah, one thing that we found really interesting was, over the last couple of years, obviously, with the influence of the pandemic, there was much attention given to older consumers being more vulnerable to disease and illness. But actually, what our research found was that baby boomers tend to be more confident about their immunity overall compared to the younger generation. That may have been because they feel that they came out of COVID-19 unscathed and they've got a healthy body. But nevertheless, we know that older consumers are more likely to take a proactive approach to health. And the obvious reason for that is any serious health problems are likely to have more serious implications. We know they're also more concerned about their daily energy and activity levels in general compared to the younger generation. Again, the younger generation might see tiredness and fatigue with just an inevitable consequence of modern life, where in comparison for the older generation, again, it might show that there's a decline in overall wellness. So they were very much focused on day-to-day issues. So their cognitive health, their emotional wellness, their digestive health, energy and activity levels. And we also know that females take a more proactive approach to health compared to older male baby boomers as well.
So before we get more specific, can you tell us about some of the other current trends you're seeing in the nutrition and well-being spaces? What's catching your eye at the moment?
Yeah, so the big trend we're talking about is the last couple of years, for obvious reasons with the pandemic, it was health at all costs. You know, consumers, no matter what they were purchasing, they were looking for that functional claim, that ingredient claim. They were really looking to maximize well-being. Now that COVID's out of the news and we've got different worries in terms of the cost of living crisis, we're moving away from that health at all costs to more considered health. So consumers are still taking a more proactive approach to health. One of the legacies of COVID-19 is that consumers still remain relatively conscious about vulnerability to disease and illness, meaning they're focusing on prevention over cure. They're still seeking out functional products as well, or those everyday products that they believe to be better for you or outright healthy. However, they're being more scrutinizing of products in general and questioning, do I really need this? They're kind of prioritizing what their areas of wellness are. They're focusing more on day-to-day issues such as what they see in the mirror and how they feel, as opposed to that kind of long-term immune health, which we saw that was so prevalent during the pandemic. And instead, consumers, they're still purchasing health and wellness products, but they're questioning, do they generally need that product? And does that product offer good value for money? Which is putting real emphasis on products they want that are deemed trustworthy and effective. And I think that's what we're going to see now over the next couple of years. You know, consumers won't just simply buy something because it's got a functional claim. They need to validate that purchase.
And do you think that's about the economic squeeze, or is that just about people being sort of wising up to what's written on the product and taking more attention?
I think it's a mixture of both. We know many consumers feel that their health and wellness routines will be impacted by cost of living. That's both in terms of what they purchase and their well-being in general. But I also believe that once something's out of the news, people become relatively fatigued about something. We only have to see how consumers are reacting to news about a new variant of COVID compared to what they did a couple of years ago. And I think, as I say, consumers have almost become fatigued of being scared about their health. So what we're doing now is they're focusing and it's becoming more considered in general.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And then what about, and looking at these current trends again, what about trends that are specific to women's health? Is there sort of any difference, or is it the same sort of, is it reflected in the same sort of attitude changes?
Well, one of the, obviously, the as you mentioned at the beginning, the females over the age of 50 have a unique set of circumstances. And what we're seeing at the moment when we look about healthy aging is people are living longer, but they're not necessarily living a healthy lifestyle to the end. Now, obviously, common sense says that, you know, a 90-year-old is never going to have the lifestyle of a 20-year-old, no matter what, how much quinoa they have and how many early nights,
etc. Oh, Mike, you're ruining things for me. I was looking forward to it.
But the reality is that whilst females tend to be more proactive in a lot of areas, when it comes to postmenopausal health, there's still that bit of reactiveness. There's an acceptance of the symptoms. There's various symptoms that people suffer regularly from, stress, hot flushes, to things such as poor metabolic health and increased brittle bones. And there's also a kind of lack of awareness about what products are available. And not always do people go and seek a healthcare professional, which means they either have no advice or potentially given the wrong kind of advice if they're searching online or they're asking family and friends, which isn't relevant to their unique circumstances. So there's still this area where, despite women, baby boomers being more proactive to health in general and saying, how can I address my emotional wellness, my digestive health, etc., there's still these symptoms that arise from the menopause and postmenopause, where they kind of have this reactive mindset and still suffer from such health problems on a daily basis that does actually have an impact on their quality of life.
Now, Elisa, let's bring you in here. What are some of the challenges that women face when it comes to maintaining overall health, especially as they grow older?
So Mike touched on, I guess, the key kind of change as women age, and that's menopause. And even in the run-up to menopause, women start to undergo a variety of changes. So the menstrual cycles start to change, become more irregular, and that reflects hormonal changes that are going on. And even in the 4 to 5 years prior to menopause, the body composition starts to shift. So to a greater percentage of body fat, and that can be distressing. We think of testosterone as an anabolic hormone that promotes muscle mass, but estrogen is actually an anabolic hormone in women. So that might be kind of known in terms of the link between bone mass and estrogen, might mention brittle bones. But maybe what's not as well appreciated is this link between estrogen and muscle mass and strength. And there is a clear drop in strength and mass relative to older men post-menopause, and that's linked to that drop in estrogen. Also, post-menopausal women have poor blood glucose control and an increased risk of these cardiovascular risk factors like blood pressure and blood lipids that are elevated. I find this really interesting. There's been changes in the gut microbiome that have been observed with that transition through menopause. And recently a study from China has shown that there's a link between muscle mass and the gut microbiome in menopausal women. So plenty of changes going on there.
Yeah, the gut microbiome comes into every flipping conversation we have. Literally everything comes down to that at some point. So how can proper nutrition support the health of older women when there are so many changes afoot?
Well, I guess I'll touch on some of these things as we go along, but the key is to keep a balanced diet, maybe not always eating the way you did when you were younger. So you may want to shift away from some of these things that cause these dysregulated glucose and lipid responses with meals. But nutrition can certainly play a role in the health of older women.
And what about protein? Why is protein particularly important?
Well, yeah, that's great to focus on. So protein intake is important for everyone as they get older. Muscle loss does affect men and women. But as I mentioned, it's important for older women to focus on it because they've got this tendency to lose muscle mass and strength more rapidly than men. And also dietary protein plays a role in maintaining bone health. In research on older women, it's been found that a significant proportion don't even get this blanket recommendation of not 0.8 grams per kilogram per day. And these lower protein intakes, that the groups that are lower in it have been shown to have lower physical performance, higher body fat, and then over time, muscle loss. So older adults, particularly older women, but older men too, should all be aiming for higher intakes of 1 to 1.3 grams per kilogram a day. And in terms of a meal, what that looks like is 25 to 40 grams of high quality protein per meal.
Okay, so Mike, let's see if there's anything in the data. You know, are there trends that we're seeing around protein intake in women at the moment that reflect these changes? You know, do they tend to get enough protein? Do we know that?
Unfortunately, no. The one thing that we know with consumers is that they have a kind of aspirational view towards protein. But if you ask the average person, how much protein do you need a day? And do you get enough protein a day? They won't be able to tell you how much they need. And they'll probably just say enough when you ask them about their diets. And the danger of that is some people may be under consuming. As Alyssa points out, you know, protein consumption is really important amongst older consumers for various reasons. But they tend to be less likely to consume the right amount. And I think one of the reasons for that is this kind of aspirational position of protein in recent years, where it's kind of moved from an ingredient that's vital from for the body for overall health and wellness to something that's associated with sports nutrition and energy and activity. So you kind of have this scenario where you have the over 55s kind of sometimes can look at protein and say, well, I get enough, and these products that are enhanced with protein that are actually really going to be beneficial for me. That's for the kind of 18 to 34 year old who wants to go to the gym or lead this active lifestyle or simply wants to get something through the day. So you kind of get this really kind of relaxed approach to protein where, yeah, of course it's important, of course we get some, but we can't tell you how much we need, we don't monitor it. And actually these products that are high in protein, they're for the younger generation, not us. And again, whilst there's, you know, increase in protein is not going to make everything, you know, go away. As it was mentioned, you know, the fact that there's this healthy diet where you consume enough protein can impact and improve the quality of the life that so many postmenopausal females say are impacted by these conditions that we suffer.
Now, Lisa, you mentioned quality protein, and it sort of brings to mind the idea that there are different types of protein and that there are different values to them. Let's talk a little bit more specifically about this. How does whey protein differ from other sorts of protein, and specifically in relation to more mature women?
Yeah, sure. So, it's a great question, because women might be trying to figure out what's right for them, what would work for them. And just again, going back to older adults in general, there's this concern that muscle becomes resistant or anabolically resistant to the effects of protein as you get older. They're not quite sure why, but it seems like it doesn't use amino acids as well as the muscle in younger people. It might take it up, it might absorb it, but it doesn't seem to incorporate it into muscle protein as well. But the great news is actually that whey protein is effectively digested and absorbed by older women. So this is evident through studies where it's shown to effectively increase the levels of the indispensable amino acids in the blood. So there's a nice big change after whey's been consumed, and then that drives effective muscle protein synthesis. So it looks like older women respond to whey. They're not resistant to it if you give enough amounts of it. On the other hand, collagen, which has become a very popular protein in supplements, beauty from within type supplements, skin supplements, that doesn't stimulate muscle protein synthesis in older women. So it doesn't contain the same levels of those indispensable or essential amino acids as whey does. Whey has good levels of leucine, which is the key. If you need to remember one amino acid, it's leucine, and because that's the trigger of muscle protein synthesis. Also, whey contains cysteine and methionine. They're sulfur amino acids, and they're components of keratin, which is a major protein in hair and nails, and hair and nails can become a concern as women get older. So it provides those building blocks as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, I guess we know that hormones play a significant role in the lives of older women, and especially during menopause. You mentioned several hormones yourself. What are the lifestyle choices should people be thinking about when going through the menopause?
Well, touching back to this idea of the gut microbiome changing, for example, so I think we all know, you hear numbers going around like 90% of people in Europe don't get enough dietary fiber. And we know getting enough fiber is important for supporting gut health. So that should probably be a key focus in women as they get older. But they shouldn't lose sight of getting sufficient high quality protein when trying to get to those target levels, I think about 30 grams a day. So high fiber foods don't always contain good levels of protein or high quality protein, again, with the complete suite of the essential or indispensable amino acids. That's where a protein like whey protein can help. In a recent study, they gave older adults either plant-based proteins combined with fiber or whey protein with fiber. And when they drank that in a drink or consumed it, the plant protein fiber combinations did not increase the leucine levels in the blood as well as the whey fiber did. So there could be some interference there with the anabolic properties of the protein, whereas whey retains that, and so if you're having your high fiber foods, make sure you're maybe supplementing that with whey to make sure you're getting the whey for your muscles as well. Another thing that's often advised around the menopause is cutting back on alcohol for various reasons, and there's actually a muscle benefit to that too, because alcohol can be detrimental to muscle health. It actually inhibits muscle protein synthesis in one study. And even taking whey alongside it did not quite cancel out the effects of the alcohol. So if you want to get the most from your whey, look at maybe toning down the alcohol consumption at the same time.
Yeah. And it's interesting that there's a sort of interconnectedness to this, isn't there? Because you're talking about muscle now as well. So as well as diet, exercise is also said to be important for maintaining optimal health during menopause. Why is it important, and what role does protein play in helping to support an active lifestyle? Because, you're talking about muscles and bones and all these different issues, which obviously, are reflected in potential for exercise and people sort of either being able to or not being able to exercise.
Yeah, so exercise is like almost medicine in itself. It's critical for maintaining your independence and your active lifestyle. So when I talk about exercise, I'm talking specifically about resistance exercise, which maybe older women don't always think of first when they think of being active, but In well-controlled studies, it's been shown to improve strength, muscle mass, walking speed, so functional capacity. And these are all things you want to maintain in order to stay independent as you age. And it doesn't, these studies were in the gym using high intensity resistance exercise, but it doesn't have to be. It has been shown to be safe and effective in older women, but it doesn't have to be heavy weights. There was a study from Japan where older women were given routines at home where they used their body weight and resistance bands. And that was also shown to be effective. And then when you bring weigh into it, there'd be two groups in these studies where one did the exercise with maybe carbohydrate or a placebo, and then those that did the took weigh alongside the exercise, there were even further improvements in those measures of strength, mass, function with the weigh supplementation. So you want that synergistic effect by combining the two.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us a bit about how whey can support women's health through the different phases of menopause. Because, you know, example, there's perimenopause and postmenopause. Is there a difference in women's nutritional needs during separate phases? And how does whey fit into that?
So again, I think I mentioned it earlier, body composition changes can start in the years prior to menopause or perimenopause. And supplementation with whey can help manage that increase. It's been shown to help reduce the increase in body fat. And then of course, it's great for muscle maintenance. So keeping the lean mass up and the fat mass down. And again, the best results are obtained with exercise. Whey is... If people are concerned about sources of protein, whey is particularly good because it can be very low fat and low sugar. In fact, certain isolates are virtually fat and sugar free. So women don't need to be worried about taking that if they're concerned about additional fat and carbohydrate in it. Now, I also mentioned after menopause, you start getting those cardiometabolic changes. So the excursions of blood glucose post meals and blood lipids, and whey's also been shown to reduce those kind of responses after a meal. It can help control that, the glycemia, postprandial glycemia and lipid increases. And then using some of our very own whey protein in a longer term trial, blood pressure was shown to improve in middle-aged adults with elevated blood pressure. So it can have benefits on all of those changes that you can start seeing as you go through menopause. Also, I should say, because sleep can be a big issue during menopause, and everyone wants to get a good night's sleep, that there's been some intriguing research showing that the protein fraction in whey, alpha-lactalbumin, may benefit people with sleep complaints. They reported daytime alertness being improved and attention after having some of this protein fraction the night before. But that requires further research.
Yeah, that sounds like whey's got it all going on, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Extraordinary. Okay, so we've unpacked a lot about nutrition and about lifestyle and about you know, things that you can do to adapt. But let's kind of come back to trends again. So, Mike, in many parts of the world, you know, we now have an aging population. How is that affecting the types of research and the products that are emerging? Are there any trends along those lines that you can identify? Because it's a big issue that a lot of nations are having to face on quite a big scale.
Yeah, absolutely. And even the countries that we historically associated with having a young population, the medium age continues to rise. What we're seeing is, you know, the industry in itself is realizing now that the concept of healthy aging isn't something that just applies to 18 to 34 year olds, and then after that people are kind of blasé about their health. And in fact, the kind of senior demographic is one that is really important. One, is growing. Two, they tend to be more proactive about their health. And three, they actually have more disposable income. You know, we saw some research in January, for instance, that said, you know, older consumers tended to be more financially confident, and they were less inclined to feel that they'd have to change their spending on health and wellness products for financial reasons. At the same time, a lot of senior consumers kind of feel that they're not represented in the health and wellness market, and that products aren't really suited for them. There's this kind of view that anything around energy and vitality is aimed at 18 to 34 year olds, and there's still this belief that older consumers can be targeted in a kind of negative way associated with vulnerability.
They're reading books. They don't need to exercise. What's wrong with this?
Well, it's kind of this view that sometimes that people can feel that if they're 55, then marketeers think that they're in God's waiting room, and you know, there's a hand, and it's actually couldn't be further from the truth. You know, irrespective of how old you are, nobody likes to be told that they're old. And nobody likes to be associated with vulnerability and being out of touch. And there's a kind of lot of still age-related stereotypical marketing that doesn't ring true. And what we're having with a lot of products is, as I said, they're targeted so much at the 18 to 34-year-old market, who, of course, they're important, but we do it sometimes at the without overlooking at the over 55-year-old market. And I think sometimes with these products, it sounds daft. But I think the kind of message is it actually just has to be toned down and it being made a bit more generic, where this product is actually for everyone. You know, the need to have an adequate amount of protein in your diet and to focus on prevention over cure and to monitor your diet and lead a healthy lifestyle isn't just something that's applicable for younger consumers. It's something that's applicable for everyone. And I think that's what the market needs to be doing. You know, it needs to tone the marketing down. It kind of needs to kind of make the product suitable for everyone and say, actually, you know, these products aren't just for the 18 to 34 year old who goes to the gym every day. These are for perhaps the 60 year old who, okay, doesn't lead as an active lifestyle, but still sees themselves young and healthy. And if anything, wants to break age-related stereotypes. Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Don't stop being sexy. Don't stop telling people that they're exciting and interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you know, especially if they're willing to pay a premium price for these products.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there you go. That's where it really comes through, isn't it? Okay. And Elisa, the same question for you, really. And, you know, any clearly identifiable trends that you can identify in terms of sort of research and products? And what is it that you are particularly excited about about emerging research?
Well, I think it's just exciting to start seeing all this research coming out on women, particularly because historically in the space around protein, exercise, muscle, strength, that's been carried out on young men. But now there's just been initially just older adults, maybe older men, and now in recent years, older women are starting to get some attention as well. And that's on a global scale.
About bloody time, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, some of the studies I mentioned, they're being conducted in countries where there is a rapidly growing proportion of older adults. So I think I referred to China and Japan. So some of that microbiome muscle stuff that's coming out of China. So I think, and I'd be interested to hear what if Mike has any insights around some of those other markets, and this idea, again, not large tubs of protein that you might associate with bodybuilding, but with this awareness in those markets for the benefits of protein for older women, what sort of products might be geared towards them. I'm quite hopeful this will lead to some exciting innovation, especially here in the UK. In some ways, it seems like they're a bit further ahead in Asia with this awareness.
So Mike, you've got your ear to the ground here. You know, are you spotting anything that you can tell us about?
Yeah, I mean, but one thing I did want to say with this is, in the markets, is saying that they're rightfully getting more attention, this demographic now. And there's a real need for it with everyday food and drink products, because, you know, we mentioned not everybody goes and seeks out medical treatment. And we asked older women in a survey earlier this year, part of our Women Health survey, you know, would they consider hormonal treatment to deal with postmenopausal? And a lot of women were very conscious about this because, you know, the side effects can be quite serious. We're not talking about potential, you know, headaches. We're talking things like blood clots, you know, when there was this real need for those kind of everyday products. At the same time, again, there was this kind of lack of awareness in certain countries about what protein can do. You know, it was associated with muscle mass. But that was in terms of more likely to be like optimizing your body and kind of like aiming for to have the body of a weightlifter as opposed to helping then erosion of the muscle with later life, for instance. So I think whilst, you know, people are kind of learning about protein and they're taking an active interest in it, which is great, there's still so much more to do where they can learn about. And I think, you know, you're right, but there's kind of some markets where people are slightly ahead and realize that protein can help with this, it can help with that. But again, there's some still real lack of awareness and sometimes people not making the association and, you know, associating protein with muscle mass and strength is a prime example of that. Sometimes it's so preoccupied with this big tub of protein aimed at the person who goes to the gym that, you know, someone might not make the immediate connection between actually my muscles eroding and the problems with that, then actually I need a protein fortified or a high protein product, you know, which can just actually help prevent that. So I think, again, you know, one of the things the industry has done, not in the best way, but they've gone, how do we target females? I know, we'll make the packaging pink and we'll make the flavor a bit sweeter. And it's that kind of really stereotypical, outdated, where actually what you can do is you can communicate the information and say, this is why it's applicable to you through the science as opposed to the color of the packaging.
It's bizarre. It's almost as though the marketing aspects are as immature as our understanding of the area. You know, it's just emerging research, beginning to come through, people being aware of the subject, but a lot of things that are still yet to catch up, which is also quite exciting because there's a lot of change coming about and you know, I guess a lot of potential from it as well.
Yeah, and the great thing I was just going to say, Stefan, is it's not necessarily about fundamentally changing the market. It's not about kind of changing people's views who are reluctant to these products. It's just about raising awareness and positioning products in a certain way so that people feel that they're applicable for them. So actually the solution is one that's relatively straightforward. It's just educating people more and saying, hey, these products are for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Elisa, anything to add to that? I mean, it sounds what Mike's saying sounds pretty sensible.
Yeah, maybe that's what we just need. We need a protein that says, this is for you. Hey, you, ladies.
Excellent.
and they'll listen.
Excellent.
And they'll buy it.
And the research to back it up. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that was absolutely fascinating. So Dr. Elisa Glover and Mike Hughes, that was absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Stefan.